We're going to talk about Samson, and as our scripture reading pointed out, in Hebrews chapter 11, we're just going to look at verses 32 and to 34 at the moment. Hebrews 11 is a passage that lists out what I would call heroes of faith, and most people do. These are people that are noted for their faith. That's listed mostly through the Old Testament. Not everyone is mentioned here in Hebrews 11 is actually mentioned in the Old Testament. But it does mention a large number and the people that we admire for the faith that they have. But in Hebrews chapter 11, starting with verse 32, it says, "What more shall I say? For time would fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel, and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of the fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight." And it goes on to talk about all the things that were accomplished. But if we look at that list, some of us will look at it and say, what's Samson doing there? Because it's true, Samson's one of those characters you learn about in Bible school, and you really admire his great strength. But if you look at his life, it's anything but what most people would want to imitate, or should imitate, for that matter. How is it that Samson, with all his sins, comes to be listed with the greats like Noah and Abraham? To understand that, we need to look at the life of Samson. So that's basically what we're going to do today. In the story of Samson, at the very beginning of it, in the days of Samson's parents, the Philistines had oppressed Israel. The Israelites had sinned. God allowed the Philistines to come in to as punishment for that. And the Philistines, at the point of the beginning of this story, have held the land of Israel now for 43 years. So in Judges chapter 13, and in verse 1 it says, "Now the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, so that the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. And they continued, by the way, the Philistines, even after Samson, they continued to be a threat through the lives of Samuel, the lives of Saul, and even David had to deal with the Philistines. This is not a short period of time. One of the ways that they managed to hold on to the Israelites for so long, at least at the beginning, was that they controlled the supply of iron. They had a monopoly on it. And they basically did not allow any Israelite to own their own weapons. They weren't even allowed to basically do any dealings with blacksmiths or anything like that. If you wanted your plow repaired, you had to go to a Philistine. Nobody could hold and own iron in that way. They couldn't even possess things that were made out of metal. Now, at this time, an angel of the Lord appears to Manoah's wife, who was barren, to tell her that she could have a son, and she would be having a son. So starting in verse 3, it says, "The angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, 'Behold now, you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and give birth to a son. Now therefore, be careful not to drink wine or drink strong drink or eat anything unclean. For behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. For the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines.'" The son that she was to have was to be sanctified to God. He was to live as a Nazarite his entire life. not just from the time he was born, but even prior to his birth. From the time of his conception, he was to be a Nazarite. And there are three points that should be emphasized. Nazarite's vows were when you wanted to make a very solemn oath to God. And there were three things that you had to do. If you were an adult, if you did this, one of them was that you could not drink anything made from grapes. Could not eat anything. You couldn't even eat grape leaves. And of course, that would also eliminate all alcoholic beverages. Even those that are not made from grapes in this particular case. So no alcohol of any sort, but also nothing that was made from grapes of any sort. You couldn't have grape juice for breakfast or anything like that. Plus, they could not eat or touch anything unclean, because that would make them, therefore, unclean. And they must not cut his hair. That was part of the Nazarite vow. Usually, when an adult did it, you cut your hair off at the beginning of the vow. When you completed the vow, you cut it off again, and that hair was then burnt as a sacrifice before God. So what grew while you were under that vow, that was burnt. But Samson's mother, Manoah's wife, was told that her son was to be dedicated all his life, so he would never cut his hair. The entire life. And that becomes an important point in the story for us to understand what was going on. And when he grows up, what she is told is that he would be the beginning of the deliverance of Israel. He would start the process. It doesn't say he was going to end it. In fact, he did not live to finish it, because that didn't happen until the days of David, many, many years later. And as Samson grew, God did bless him, and the Spirit did stir within him. In Judges chapter 13 and verse 25, it says, "And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him in Mahanaim, between Zorah and Eshtaol." And so he began to show great strength. So moved by God, as we get into chapter 14, Samson had an inclination to marry a woman. And it was a Philistine woman of all nations. And starting with chapter 14, verse 1, it says, "Then Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. So he came back and told his father and mother, 'I saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, go get her for me as a wife.' Then his father and his mother said to him, 'Is there no woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all our people that you go to take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?' But Samson said to his father, 'Get her for me, for she looks good to me.' However, his father and his mother did not know that it was the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. Now at that time, the Philistines were ruling over Israel." God was behind Samson's inclination. He wanted a reason for a fight to break out. And so he was going to stir up trouble between the Israelites and the Philistines through Samson. But why would God want Samson to marry a non-Israelite? When we think about that. Well, there are times when God has used the wicked to accomplish his goals. Just as an example, just hold your finger here and go over to Hosea. Hosea chapter 1. It wasn't too long ago that we went through this book. But in Hosea chapter 1, and in verse 2, it says, "Then the Lord first spoke to Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, 'Go take yourself a wife of harlotry and have children of harlotry, for the land commits flagrant harlotry, forsaking the Lord.'" And I just had that passage read by one person just this last week. And why would God do that for? You know, after all, why tell somebody to marry a prostitute? But the point is that his woes with his wife illustrated God's problems with the children of Israel. And God made that as a living illustration. Here God is looking to cause problems with the Philistines. He's taking Samson's natural inclinations and using them to further his purpose. And Samson's parents don't understand. They try to talk their son out of marrying this woman. Now, you know, one of the things you also take note of, the word that's described to this woman, the word here is not the word that's used for an unmarried virgin woman when it describes the daughter of the Philistines. She's not an Israelite. She's probably not a virgin. And as you notice, if you go through the reading, Samson's reason for marrying her is absolutely atrocious. It's poor. He wants her solely because she looks good. That's the only reason he can give his parents for why he wants to marry this particular woman. She looks good. But Samson prevails. And their marriage was arranged. And while traveling with his parents to meet the woman, a young lion attacks Samson. And we get to the first one of the stories that most young people remember. In Judges 14, verse 5, it says, "Then Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother, and came as far as the vineyards of Timnah. And behold, the young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that he tore him as one tears a young goat, though he had nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or mother what he had done." So somehow they were not together at the moment, but a lion attacks Samson. And here we first learn of Samson's great strength given to him by the Lord. He kills a lion with his bare hands. And it's not like he got a good chokehold on him. That's not what it says. It says in the scriptures that he literally ripped the lion apart. Now think about how much strength that takes. And this is what Samson did. Now later on, as they were on the way to the actual marriage, Samson found the carcass of the lion that he had killed. And strangely, honeybees had formed a hive in the carcass. And Samson took some of the honey and also gave some to his parents. Now, the reason why I want to point that out is I want you to take notice that Samson violated his vows. So he was to eat nothing unclean. But that honey in the honeycomb came from a dead carcass. That was unclean. Worse, he got his parents involved in it too, because he gave them to it without their knowing where it came from. In fact, that's why he did not tell his parents where that honey came from. But as they continued on, Samson held a feast, as was custom, at a wedding ceremony. There was a ceremony where the groom held a feast, and the feast lasted 7 days. Now, some speculate here that most wedding feasts serve wine and other alcoholic beverages. So if Samson partook at this feast, then he would have violated the second part of his vows as well. And at that feast, it was proper for groomsmen, attendants. And so Samson was given 30 attendants. But there were Philistine attendants. And as part of the entertainment, Samson offers a riddle to those who are there. And it's in Judges 14, starting with verse 12. "Then Samson said to them, 'Now let me come propound a riddle to you. If you will indeed tell it to me within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes. But if you are unable to tell me, then you shall give me 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes.' And they said, 'Propound your riddle that we may hear it.' So he said to them, 'Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet.' But they could not tell the riddle in 3 days." They were getting nervous. These young men worked on that puzzle for 3 days and couldn't figure it out. What do you do when you're young and you got a puzzle and you can't figure it out? You don't go asking wise men or something like that. They go and make threats. Because that's what young men tend to do. So they threatened Samson's wife. They said that they would burn their house down with her and her father and son if she didn't get the answer for them. Instead of telling Samson of the threat, she goes to him and whines and begs for an answer. And finally, on the 7th day of the wedding, he gives in, and she tells the attendants. And Samson knows how they solve the problem. So in vengeance, instead of just getting 30 garments, which was an expensive task anyway, in vengeance, Samson gets 30 garments by going out and killing 30 Philistines. And then giving it to the attendants. Then he stomps home in anger without his wife. Later, he goes back to see his wife, and he presents her with a young goat. That one probably would pass by most people's heads. But back in Genesis chapter 38. Genesis 38 and verse 15. Let's see if I can find my... It says, when Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot, for she had covered her face. So he turned aside by the road and said, here now, let me come into you. For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what will you give me that you may come into me? And she said, therefore, I will send you a young goat from the flock. And she said, moreover, will you give a pledge until you send it to me? And then he offered a pledge of his staff and his signet ring. But back in those days, the price of a prostitute was a young goat. You see, what Samson was doing is he brought a young goat as an insult. It was a present, but at the same time he was insulting her. Because what he was charged before he stomped off is that the reason why these attendants found out the answer to his puzzle is because they were sleeping with his bride-to-be. But he did come back to get her. But when he came back, he found out that his father-in-law had married off his wife to his best man at the wedding. So in anger, Samson ties firebrands to 150 pairs of foxes and then releases them right through the harvested fields, right during the peak of harvest season. Harvest season, when you harvest wheat, you have to wait until it's really dry. All the fields are dry, all the grain's dry. And then Samson releases 150 pairs of foxes with firebrands between them, running through all these fields. The damage is so huge to the wheat harvest, and the wheat that was still in the field, it also damaged the vineyards, it killed off olive trees. People were looking at starving after what Samson had got done with. But the Philistines, instead of going and getting Samson to take care of this problem, grabbed Samson's wife and her father and did exactly what they had threatened earlier to do. They put him in a house and burned it down. Samson, in retaliation, then turns around and kills a large number of Philistines. And we get to Judges chapter 15, and in verse 8, it says, he struck them ruthlessly with a great slaughter, and he went down and lived in the cleft of the rock of Etham. You think sometimes you look at your own family and you think you have family problems? And most of this, though, is being generated by Samson himself, just because of his headstrongness in trying to deal with these problems. So the Philistines gather an army to find him. And the Philistines were afraid to actually go after Samson directly. So they asked Samson to give himself up. And after several negotiations, Samson said, okay, if you tie me up with new ropes, then actually it was the Israelites around were afraid of the Philistine army coming. And so he finally told the Israelites, okay, if you tie me up with new ropes, I'll let you give me over to the Philistines, which they did. They tied him up with new ropes, presented him to the Philistines, and then we get to chapter 15 and verse 14. Then he came to Lehi. The Philistines shouted as they met him, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so the ropes that were on his arms were as flax as it was burnt with fire. And his bonds dropped from his hands, and he reached, found the fresh jawbone of a donkey. So he reached out, took it, and killed 1,000 men with it. Then Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I've killed 1,000 men. He's somewhat of a poet, too. So Samson bursts the ropes with the power, and the illustration is it was nothing. Flax might actually hold, but if you take any plant material and burn it, I think even the smallest child here could break those. And that's the way the ropes were on Samson. And he picks up a jawbone of a donkey. This is a fresh jawbone. In other words, a donkey that's just been killed not too long ago. And slaughters 1,000 Philistines. And notice, once again, Samson violated his vows. He touched something unclean, something that was dead. The word for donkey and the word for heap, by the way, in Hebrew, are the same word. And so what he's doing in his poem is making a pun. That with the jawbone of a donkey, which is the same word for heap, I made a heap of men. Or made donkeys out of them, basically, is another way to put it. And after all this work, he was thirsty and he called upon God for help. In Judges chapter 15, starting with verse 18, then he became very thirsty and he called upon the Lord and said, you have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. Now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? But God split the hollow place that is in Lehi. So the water came out, and he drank, and his strength returned, and he revived. Therefore he named it Enkakor, which is in Lehi to this day. And it goes on to say that he judged Israel for 20 years. He recognized where his power came from. That's why I want to point this out. He knew who he was serving, even while he was violating the very vows that he was supposed to be under. And the story then moves to 20 years later. So Samson's probably in his late 30s. And he judged Israel, so he's probably been harrying the Philistines all this time, waging wars, campaigns off on the side. And where we pick up the stories, we find Samson in Gaza, where he saw a prostitute and decided to spend time there. See, Samson continues to have problems with Philistine women. It shows that even though he served God, his service did not prevent him from sinning. The men of Gaza found out that the notorious Samson was in town, so they came up with this clever idea, we'll just lock the gates, post guards, and then decide to take Samson in the morning. However, Samson got up at midnight, and when he found the gates, city gates were locked, and we're not talking about little garden gates. In fact, when I was trying to find an illustration of this, I could not find a really good illustration. Because some of them show them picking up something I could carry. No, he's talking about city gates, where you probably have at least wide enough to get a a couple carts through, and to be able to hold an army out, because it's part of your wall and your defense. Samson gets out, finding the gates locked, pulled them up, pulled them right out of the wall, and then carried them 7 miles up a hill, where he then set it back up. Now, well, if you think about it, what happened to the guards? Because they're not mentioned here anywhere. Somehow God must have intervened, but we don't know exactly how. And of course, God did give Samson that incredible strength. Shortly thereafter, Samson falls in love with a woman named Delilah. And by the description, Bible scholars believe that she too was a prostitute and most likely was a Philistine. My, we keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again. She's offered 5,500 shekels of silver to find out Samson's source of strength. Because they all understand this is not a normal man. He has to be getting this from somewhere. Now, one shekel of silver is equal to about 4 days' wages. So 5,500 shekels of silver would be somewhere about $700,000 in our currency. In other words, they didn't offer her a small amount. They offered her a fortune. The Philistines realized that his strength has to be beyond human, so they wanted to find the source of it. 2 times she begged Samson to tell her what the secret was, and 2 times Samson gives her a false tale. He lies. And those 2 times, she tries to bind Samson, and each time it fails. So then for days afterwards, she nags Samson, here's that nagging again, about a secret. And we get to Judges chapter 16 and verse 15. Then she said to him, "How can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You've deceived me these 3 times. It was 3 times. I had 2 times down. And have not told me where your great strength is." And it came about when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him that his soul was annoyed to death. So he told her all that was in his heart and said to her, "A razor has never come on my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I am shaved, then my strength will leave me and I'll become weak and be like as any other man." So Samson gives in and tells her that the Nazarite vow is the reason why he has this great strength. The strength is really not in his hair. It's in the keeping of the vow. God has given him strength. Why does Samson tell her this? Because I don't think Samson really believed it was going to happen. He's violated his vows in the past. He's done things he shouldn't do while he was under a Nazarite vow. God still was with him and God still gave him the strength. I think somehow Samson really believed God would not leave him. After all, he broke his vows and God remained. So he thought, yeah, maybe she'll try that, but I'll just be like before. And yet this time Samson pushed God too far. Take a look at Judges 16. Starting with verse 19. She made him sleep on her knees and called for a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his hair. Then she began to afflict him and his strength left him. She said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And he woke from his sleep and said, "I will go out as at other times and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. And there was a fault. There was a flaw. He thought it was just going to be just like all the other times. Sure, he violated his vows, but it doesn't matter. I'm just going to go and do what I have to do. But he went too far. The Philistines took Samson, they gouged out his eyes, and then put him to work grinding wheat. And some time passes because Samson's hair grows back. And the point of mentioning here is not because the source of his strength is in his hair. The reason why the scriptures mention it is because the Philistines have become lax. See, they thought the strength of his strength was in the hair, but they didn't keep him shaved. It also is an indication, a hint, that Samson's heart was turning back to God. See, a feast was held to celebrate the Philistines' god Dagon. And in Judges chapter 16, starting with verse 34, 23, sorry, 16 verse 23. Now the lords of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon their god, and to rejoice, for they said, our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hands. And when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, our God has given our enemy into our hands, even the destroyer of our country, who has slain many of us. Now, it says all the lords and the upper society were there. This was not a small celebration. This was the elite of the elite among the Philistines. They praised Dagon. They claimed that he brought them Samson. And then Samson was called for to provide entertainment for these lords. And during a rest period, they chained him between two support pillars on the building. And while he was there, he prayed for his strength back one more time. In Judges 16, verse 28, then Samson called to the Lord and said, O Lord God, please remember and please strengthen me just this time, O God, that I may at once be avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. And then he pushed the support pillars apart and the building toppled, killing thousands of people, including Samson. Said over 3,000 were on the roof alone. And it mentions he killed more people in his death than he killed in his entire life. But there's some things I want you to think about that we get from this story. God can use the wicked as well as the righteous to accomplish his will. Our own righteousness or our own wickedness will not stop God from doing what he wants done. Samson was a wicked man most of his life, all his life, except for right at the end. But God still made use of him. Samson could have been a very righteous man if he chose to. God would still have made use of him. And God punishes wrongdoing. But he might wait in delivering that punishment. Samson had been doing wrong for quite a while, and it got to the point where he thought he was getting away with it. Until it got to one critical time. See, sin takes you a lot farther than you want to go. Samson started off chasing after loose women. He became prideful because he wasn't harmed by his earlier sins. He kept going deeper and deeper into sin. And he had plenty of warning. But he ignored them all. And sin and its consequences will hold you longer than you want to stay. Samson was in prison. He lost his eyesight. He was the mockery of all the Philistines. In fact, it costs you more than you're willing to pay. I've been talking to a young man who spent the last three nights in a row, up to the late of the night, talking to a young man who's basically that same situation. He committed sins and went a lot farther than he thought it would. And it became a lot more severe than he ever thought it would. That's the nature of sin. But I want you to notice the one thing I want to point out in this story that's significant for all of Samson's faults. He turned back to God. Why is he listed in Hebrews as a hero of faith? Because of what he did at the end. He was punished. He was blind. He was a mockery. He was in the enemy camp. And still he prayed to God to say, just one more time, give me strength. Even though he knew he probably wouldn't survive. He believed God could do that. He was a hero of faith. It doesn't matter how bad the sins are that you've committed. They have consequences. They will affect your life. But what God looks at is who you are, not who you were. And if you have faith to trust God, He'll save you. I hope you think about those things. We like to offer an opportunity. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And if there's those among us that would like to have the prayers of the brethren on behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.